Welcome, welcome, and good evening. We are Bread and Roses, Feminist News and Public Affairs. I'm your host, Della Ray, and our engineer this evening is the lovely Brooke. Our collective brings you this show every Friday night at 6 p.m. Women have had this forum on KBOO for 35 years. This airspace is here to be shared. This collective is open to new members. If you are a woman in body or spirit, we will help train and support you. If you are interested, please reach out to KBOO's volunteer coordinator, Ani Haynes. You can also find us on KBOO's website, kboo.fm, Bread and Roses, or on Facebook at KBOO, Bread Roses Women's News. This evening, we are going to discuss immunity to change. What a mouthful, huh? But before we dig in, I want to share something with you. Here's what I believe. I believe that in order to do well, we must first be well. I believe that taking the very best care of ourselves links to better everything, no exceptions. I advocate this message as an author and as a host of this show on Bread and Roses. And I will say, it's really important that I express to you, every show that I've done until now, I have not given you my absolute gratitude for community radio and to you, the listener. And always when people ask me what is one thing they can do for a better life experience, I always say, turn on community radio, for sure. So, okay, as I mentioned, the topic for this evening is about immunity to change. The question being, what gets in your way of whatever it is you'd like to be or do differently? Joining us in the studio is Joanne Seeby, current faculty member of PSU University Studies. Joanne is also a coach who helps people expand their view of what is possible, develop greater self-awareness, and improve their interactions with the world. Welcome, Joanne.
Hi, thanks, Delray.
Thank you for being here. Tell us about you.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you. This is just a real fun opportunity. I teach at PSU. I was in the corporate world, and I noticed that not only myself, but a lot of people around me felt that they were leading pretty meaningless and unfulfilled lives. And so instead of developing products, I decided I wanted to learn about how human beings develop, and I wanted to help them do that.
Mm-hmm. So I saw in your resume, if you will, that you began coaching a certification program at John F. Kennedy University.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
So their graduate school of psychology was looking for a way to be able to incorporate a teaching program for coaches. So that could be another part of the portfolio of their psychology department. Hmm. So I set up the program, the curriculum, a way to certify these individuals. And we started a whole program, and I was able to teach in that program. At the same time, then I developed a leadership program that was taught in the MBA program at Golden Gate University in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed developing these programs and having a portfolio career where mm-hmm. I was a coach, a teacher, and I developed new programs so that I could reach beyond just coaching my own clients. Mm-hmm. I could help coaches who would go on to coach their clients.
Okay. Why? Why did you choose this field?
Because I believe that everyone should have the opportunity to expand their capacity mm-hmm. to live a meaningful and fulfilling life, as to learn some basic skills around how human beings develop and how you develop skills to do that.
Okay. So I also read you talk about the beginner's mind. Mm. What does that mean?
A beginner's mind. So what I know is when I'm doing something for the first time, I don't know, perhaps your listeners can remember when they first learned how to play tennis or play a game or first learned how to do something that they enjoy doing, that when you first start doing it, you're aware of everything around you. You're curious. You're open. You notice things. You listen to things. On the other hand, if it's something that you've done many times over and you consider yourself knowledgeable on a subject, notice that your level of listening and presence and even awareness to what's going on around you really gets dull. Mm. And it's easy to get into that place.
So the beginner's mind is when you first start out on a particular activity.
That's how we're most familiar with that feeling. Wouldn't it be nice to have that feeling every day?
Hmm. Okay. Immunity to change. I was talking to a lot of people before I was getting ready for this interview, and when I would say immunity to change, I said, what does that mean? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? And I have to tell you, Joanne, when I think of immunity, I think of a disease, and I think of, you know, inoculations. So walk us through, just wait, not walk us through. Let's just talk about immunity, the word itself first.
Okay, so you're right on. We have a physical immunity that we are very, very happy to have. It keeps us physically healthy. When our body is attacked by a virus or a bacteria, it helps fight us off. It's really there. It's our protector.
You say triggers are a sign that our immunity system works. Am I too far ahead?
Too far.
Way too far. Okay.
Let's just back up a little bit. I want to make the distinction between, I just talked about our physical immunity, mm-hmm. which you mentioned about disease.
Right.
But what I'm talking about is our psychological immunity to change.
Okay.
And what that is we have developed systems in our childhood, and we know how to behave in the world to keep ourselves safe, to keep ourselves from being too disappointed or being too fearful. Mm-hmm. And we had developed beliefs at that point in our life about how the world works. So our immunity, our immune system is, if something new comes at us that upsets the equilibrium of our life and makes us feel a little insecure or unstable, our immunity system will kick in and we will go back to these old behaviors to feel more comfortable.
Okay. I'm going to have you repeat that last little chunk.
Okay. So when we feel that something new is coming in, that is at some point, it feels like a threat to our stability, our security, or mm-hmm. our safety, our psychological immunity system kicks in.
Psychologically.
Yes.
Okay. This conversation is great. I want to open this up to callers. 503-231-8187. If you have questions, you want to join in on this, please feel free. Joanne, keep going on this immunity.
Okay, so an example is if you want to make a change in your life, for instance, lose weight. Mm-hmm. We set that as a goal.
Right.
And then we notice that our behaviors do not match that goal and we get disappointed. We feel like we're a failure or we're lazy or whatever. What's really happening is our immune system has kicked in. And that means it's usually we look at it and think it's our enemy, it's the bad habits that we have, but it's really a very tender expression of our immune system, which we ourselves put in place to protect us.
Okay. Somebody wants to lose weight. That's an example. They've been working out or doing whatever, or maybe they haven't, mm-hmm. and they decide to eat a chocolate cake. What are you saying about eating that chocolate cake?
Ah, so what you do is you look at the goal you have mm-hmm. and how important that is in your life, and you're really committed to that goal.
Right.
And then you notice your behaviors that do not support that goal. Mm-hmm. And so you need to look deeper at those behaviors instead of beating yourself up for them. Say, what is that behavior telling me? If I didn't eat that piece of chocolate cake, what do I think, what would I feel like?
Mm. So now I want to back you up. And I think it's fair that I share with the listeners that I've gone through this process with you and I still have questions. And what I'm asking you, so you eat the chocolate cake, where does the immunity come? Is it I'm eating the chocolate cake because I'm immune to the change of wanting to lose pounds? You know, help me and help our listeners kind of piece this together a little differently. Where is the immunity to change coming in? Is it I'm feeling I want to be protected or go back to old behaviors, and that's what causes me to eat the chocolate cake?
You know, it's more than just the draw of old behavior. It's if you ask yourself the question, what would happen if I didn't eat this piece of chocolate cake?
Mm-hmm.
And you need to answer that in emotional terms. I would feel empty. I would feel unloved.
Mm-hmm.
There's some reason we're eating that chocolate cake. And so when you look at that, there's some time in your life where eating this comfort food really did fill a hole in you.
Okay.
And so this belief has taken hold. So we know that that's part of our immune system. So something's going on at that moment in that day of your life that you feel you're starting to feel uncomfortable or fearful or not comfortable with what's happening around you, which is there to protect you,
mm-hmm.
kicks in, allows you to eat that piece of chocolate cake so that you can feel safe and secure and stable.
So it's our immune system that rises up certain behaviors, whether it's cake, whatever it is we're doing, whatever habit it is we'd like to break, that allows us to continue old behaviors. And is that the immunity to change?
Right. Because those behaviors help us feel safe. And doing something new, like when you set a goal, is going to make you feel uncomfortable, possibly unsafe, possibly it'll bring up fears. And our immune system is there to protect us. So actually, it's brilliant because it protects us in ways that we're not even aware of.
But is that protecting us and fighting us to eat the cake?
Ah, but it's protecting me from feeling empty
mm.
or feeling unloved. And it's different for each individual. So for me, when I do chocolate cake eating, it's usually because I'm feeling nervous.
Mm-hmm.
I use sugar to calm myself down, or I use it as a reward.
Yeah.
If I've done something I'm really proud of, it's like, I just want a big... And so it's built into my immune system is reward yourself with something really good and sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it goes against my goal of... losing weight.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you this maybe in a different way. And perhaps it's the same question, but the theory behind immunity to change is...
Okay, so I need you to ask that in yet another way.
Okay. So what is the ultimate thought process around introducing theory of change to people? To get them to look at their habits differently?
So can I introduce technical change and adaptive change
yes,
at this point?
Yes, please do.
Okay, so traditionally in our society, we're used to what's called technological change. To make a technical change, that assumes we already have the capability, the knowledge that we need. All we need to make it happen is more time, money, or resources. Pretty much any change that we think of in today's world, it's like anybody can do it as long as you've got time, money, and resources.
That's not true, though.
In what way?
That anybody can make a change as long as they have time, money, or resources?
No, when we think about accomplishing something in the world
mm-hmm.
to make a change, if you already assume that you have the knowledge that you have to make the change... then what you're saying is, if I have the knowledge and the know-how, I should be able to do this. All I need is
gotcha.
The time, money, or resources.
Yeah.
So if I have the knowledge of how to lose weight, why am I not losing weight?
Yes.
But that's for traditional change, technological change. There's another kind of change called adaptive change, which is how humans develop and how humans change. And it requires that you create new knowledge or a new way of looking at the world.
Mm-hmm.
So our immune system is protecting our old way of looking at the world, that if I eat this chocolate cake, I will feel safe, secure. I won't feel the anxiety that's coming up in the moment.
Okay. We have a caller, Brenda. Welcome to Bread and Roses.
Hi.
Hi. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I do. I'm not sure that I'm going to articulate this exactly how it's in my head, but thank you so much for being on the program. I forget the name of the person, the person who's on there speaking.
Joanne?
Yeah, Joanne. Thank you.
You're welcome.
What it is that you're describing sounds really interesting to me, and I'm wondering, how does it synthesize with more intense trauma in somebody's life? Yeah, for instance, if somebody has been through domestic violence or sexual assault, and they've designed a kind of immunity to change since they've been protecting themselves for so long around this particular trauma, how can they reprogram themselves or relax the immunity or, work with something more traumatic?
Yeah, excellent.
Somebody trying to lose weight or change that type of a habit.
What do you say to that, Joanne?
So, first of all, I need to tell you, I am a coach. I am not a psychologist. The other thing I need to say is, if you break this down to there is a particular behavior or goal that you want to change, you would have to take it a step at a time. So if you find yourself, and I'm not saying you particularly, we could just say, staying indoors, for instance, or not wanting to meet new people. If that's your goal, is to be able to reach out and feel safe and experience this, your behaviors of staying in are not helping you reach that goal. But what's underneath that goal is this trauma. That trauma is filed in your brain as, this is how the world works. Everyone will always treat you that way. It's not safe to reach out. And that's what keeps you or an individual from reaching out. So you would take, once you understand why it feels really unsafe to reach out, then you devise a small, tiny step that you can do that would have you do something new, either go somewhere with a friend that where you would meet new people. So set it up as an experiment that would normally feel unsafe for you, but make it as safe as you can. And you set up tiny, tiny steps like this of experiments so that you can grab that old belief about the world that has probably been generalized to the whole population is not true for the whole population. It was only true time at that point in a person's life.
Does that help, Brenda, at all?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. Thank you.
Well, thank you for calling into the show. Have a great evening.
Sure, thanks. You too.
Bye. Joanne, this is such a huge topic, because I still have questions going back to the immunity piece and now how it ties into what our caller Brenda just asked. But we need to go to a break. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Where has the time all gone to? Haven't done half the things we want to. Just a token. Too many words.
We're back, and you are listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO. I'm your host, Della Ray. I just played a song performed by local jazz artist Julie Kalura, and that was called Some Other Time. Absolutely sweet. I love local music, and I always invite local musicians out there to let me hear from you. Tell me about the music that you are into. Maybe I'll play it here on my show. We are in the studio talking with Joanne Seeby, and we're discussing a rather deep subject that it's definitely thought-provoking, immunity to change. And we're certainly welcoming callers, 503-231-8187. When we left for break, we had just taken a call from Brenda, who asked a pretty incredible question about this immunity to change when it deals with something a whole lot deeper around abuse. And I'm thinking maybe we should back up a little bit more and talk about the cost of our immunity, but reminding our listeners that we're immunity as it relates to psychologically how it can affect us. Joanne, what do you say to that?
Well, I wanted to follow up on Brenda's question because it occurred to me that setting up an experiment like I suggested she do so you can test a belief that you have about trying a new behavior is important, and it's frightening and it's scary, but it's our immunity to change that's keeping us stuck. And that immunity to change is charging us rent. It's costing us. And what it costs us in our life is if we don't test immunity to change, we sacrifice reaching our goals. Because it will protect us
from reaching our goals.
Yeah, because it's going to keep us safe. And trying to reach a new goal is not going to feel safe. Internally, it's going to feel like it's going to upset this, the stability of our life. We're going to lose a little bit of the control that we have.
If we set a new goal, you're saying then that our immunity to change will inevitably, to keep us safe or to give us old comfortable feelings, those old comfortable feelings also serve as a block to get us to where we want to go.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
And this is, and I like the word emotionally, how immunity blocks us emotionally.
Absolutely.
Can we use that word?
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. So I think I interrupted you. You were on a roll about what a potential change could be, or an example that you had around what a change could be and how it could pose to get in the way of the immunity to change.
So I had a client last year that was from, she's an Asian American, and her in-laws lived with them for many, many years. And helped her raise the kids, but she was working. And so now that she wasn't working so much anymore, she wanted her kitchen back. And she wanted to set a boundary and say, okay, I want the kitchen these days. I want to get back to cooking. And she just kept doing all of these other things. She would get started in another project. She would go try to start another business. She would go try to get a job. But she said what she wanted to do was set this boundary and get her kitchen back at home. And so I asked her how that behavior was serving her. What would happen if she set a boundary with her mother-in-law? And she thought about it and she said, I would be a bad wife. I would be a bad daughter-in-law. In my culture, you respect your elders. In my culture, you would not set that kind of boundary because it's disrespectful. At the same time, what she was struggling with is her idea of what a good wife was someone that did the cooking. So she was so conflicted by what she wanted to do and what she felt safe doing. She felt that the whole family dynamic would change, the stability of her home would change if she set this boundary.
How her husband would feel about her?
Oh, yes.
She had all kinds going on, didn't she?
So it was very traumatic for her.
Sure.
So she escaped by going to work instead of handling it. And so we talked about what really would happen. And she felt the family would fall apart. So we said, let's take off a little bite and experiment with that and see what happens. See if what you believe really is what will happen.
Right. You know, we have a caller, another caller. Kelly, welcome to Bread and Roses.
Hi, thank you for having me on for a question. I really like the last caller's question about, the effects of trauma and the immunity to change. And I was wondering if you could touch upon the subject of brain function and how this plays into the, with the conscious part of our brain that does our thinking, our logic, our reason, formula, and then the subconscious that directs so much of our limbic system with our memory, our feelings, our emotions, and our senses, that, as you were saying earlier, when there is trauma in early stages, our brain develops these survival skills that kind of set the par for the rest of our life, saying that, you know, this is how the world works. And once our brain gets functioning on these levels of survival, when we change from that, our whole system, hormones, all of these things start flagging and saying, oh, nope, this isn't how we've done it forever. That's not your survival mode. We need to get back to that. And how when you actually start opening up the connection between the conscious part of the really rewire, and when we get into those moments when you have to tolerate the change and discomfort of change, you can rely on the conscious part of our brain instead of the subconscious part that so often controls that part.
For sure. So, Kelly, you want Joanne to address then what you heard from the last caller?
No, but just touch on actual brain function and the change and how this is interpreted into the work that she's speaking about.
Sure. Excellent. Joanne, what do you say to that?
You touch on a really important point here. And one is, I believe, when we look at the behaviors that we're doing that aren't serving our goal, that's like the tip of the iceberg. That's what we're conscious of. And what's really going on, when I'm saying, if you really would get below the waterline and look at if this last example, if this woman told her mother-in-law and drew a boundary that she really had all of these feelings that kept her paralyzed, kept her stuck and not being able to do it. I believe that by setting up these small tests, you can slowly teach your subconscious that it's that fear is maybe not true in this instance. And that fear is maybe not true in this instance. Because I believe my experience with this kind of fear is that it tends to generalize a lot to the trusting people. And I think all we can do to try to connect what you want to do consciously with this need to protect ourselves, which is very deep subconscious feelings. Again, I have to repeat, I'm not a psychologist, but the way we connect those is to actually do small, real experiments in the world that are safe, that we set up as safe, but that help chip away at that, that it's not true in this instance. It's not true in this instance.
Kelly, does that answer your question?
Yeah, it gets into it a little bit. It's just interesting. I've been studying trauma therapy, and it just, everything that she's touching on, it just seems that they're very interconnected. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to find out her take on that.
Yeah, well, we certainly appreciate you calling the show and spending some time here with the Bread and Roses. And you have a wonderful evening. We'll be around after the show if you want to call back. We can't even get to the next part because we still need to keep unwrapping the immunity piece itself. What do you say to that?
It feels like we might need to talk more about examples of how people have worked with this.
Yes.
That might help, because it is a difficult topic to explain. Mm-hmm. And it helps if you've experienced it as a process. And I think, I'm guessing, it might help our listeners if I give an example or continue with the example I started.
Please do it. But I do want to keep the lines open for people to feel comfortable to call in. 503-231-8187. You are listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO. Take it away, Joanne.
Okay, now one of the reasons I chose this particular woman as an example is because I've had so many similar examples that are this amazing. So we set up an experiment for her, and say that 2 days a week she wanted to have the kitchen just to herself. At this time, I didn't realize this woman was also planning on remodeling her kitchen. And so she went ahead and she was going to set this small boundary. What she ended up doing was feeling pretty clear that she was so capable in the rest of her life that she really wanted to go for setting this boundary. So what she said to her mother-in-law was, I'm planning on remodeling the kitchen, and I'm planning on setting it up so it really works for me, because I would like to do more cooking now. And her mother-in-law said, oh, I'm so glad. I really am tired of doing the cooking.
Wow.
And all of a sudden, all of her fears just dissolved. She still felt like in the role she wanted to play. But she had this belief so ingrained that if she had done that, it would completely upset the whole household. And it got so good. Her life got so good and changed her so much. And this is what I mean by when you use this immunity to change, it's adaptive change. You have to develop new knowledge, a new way of looking at the world. And that's what happened for her.
Give us another example.
Another example would be one woman was home business was the main staple for the family. Her husband was still unemployed and they had a couple of small children, and she just worked all the time. And she said, I just want 20 minutes a day to myself. She said, the happiest times I remember are when I read romance novels. Mm-hmm. She said, I just want to read a romance novel 20 minutes a day. And she felt that that would be selfish and that it's not really, she couldn't ask her husband to help even more because he was the stay-at-home dad. And so we kind of talked about what would that mean in her life and what could that do. And she almost felt like she didn't deserve it, that she couldn't ask her husband to step up one more. And so we talked about it. She asked for the 20 minutes a day. He said, I will give you the 20 minutes a day if you'll do something for me. And he said, I want you to get your hair braided again.
Mm.
And she had been wearing a scarf for 4 years, feeling like they couldn't afford the money for her to have her hair braided.
Mm.
And it just opened up this conversation between them and a way of being between them that she didn't think would ever happen. She had an idea in her mind that she had to just be the workhorse, mm-hmm. not spend any money on herself, not have any time to herself, that was the best way she could serve her family. And it wasn't.
And so I want to remind the listening audience, then, the immunity to change piece is the comfort feeling, if you will, that thinking that she has to be doing this and feeling this way is the immunity that keeps her from making the change to go to her partner and saying, you know, 20 minutes or whatever her needs are.
She believed that because of their financial situation, she had no choice but to do this. This was her job. For her family to be able to eat, to be successful, she had to do it this way and this way only. And she believed that. That was the only way she could be a good mother and wife and bread earner.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Fascinating.
What we do to ourselves.
We have these beliefs that are unconscious, and until we bring them out into the open and say, oh, maybe I still can be a good person and just have 20 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go to break. But when we come back, let's talk about unwrapping those thoughts. Let's undig some of that. You want to do that?
Mm-hmm.
We'll be right back.
You'd be so nice to come home to. You'd be so nice by the fire, while the breeze on high sang a lullaby. You'd be all that I could desire, under stars chilled by the winter, under an August moon burning above. You'd be so nice, you'd be paradise to come home to and love.
We're back. You are listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO. I'm your host, Ella Ray. That was a number by local jazz artist Julie Kalura. And the title is You'd Be So Nice to Come Home To. Joining us in the studio is Joanne Seeby. And Joanne is a coach. She's also a professor at Portland State University Studies. And this evening, we're talking about immunity to change. And the question, the ultimate question is, what gets in our way of whatever it is that we'd like to be doing or being differently? And when we left for break, we were just really talking about how our thought process is the change, is the immunity to our change. Joanne, your thoughts.
Right. So when you say the thought process, it's our beliefs about how the world works.
Mm-hmm.
And you believe the world works one way. I believe the world works another way. I believe so that my behavior, all our behavior, is a result of how we see the world and understand the world. So I know how to behave so that you will like me, or how I need to behave so that I will have friends. And I know that there's certain behaviors, if I did, I wouldn't have friends. So I have a belief about the world, about behavior. And I don't even have to think of how to operate when I want to make friends, because this is so deeply ingrained in me, this belief.
Say that last part again.
When I'm making friends or being with a friend, I don't have to consciously think of that, because my unconscious belief about the world, about what works to make me safe and help me connect with people, is so deeply ingrained in me.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about the behavior to understanding.
Okay, so I understand your question to mean once we see the behavior that's not serving
yes.
the goal that we want.
Yes.
So we look at that behavior. So the example I gave of it, so her behavior was that instant conversation and setting a boundary that she wanted to set so that she would have her kitchen to herself. She would try to start new businesses, or she would go get another job. And so I asked her, so that's her behavior. Mm-hmm. The question was, if you didn't do that, if your goal is to set a boundary at home, and you didn't go get a job, or you didn't go try to start a new business, what would happen? What would happen would be she would be at home. She would be frustrated because she wasn't in her kitchen. And she would be scared to talk to her mother-in-law to say anything.
Okay.
So you look at the behavior and you turn it around and you say, what if I didn't do that?
All right.
How would I feel? So remember, you have to look at the behavior and then you say, turn it around. What if I didn't do it? And then say, how would I feel?
Okay, so I'm going to put myself on blast. I have a behavior. I always think I have more time than I actually have. And I have to think, I mean, overthink, you know, getting out the door on time and all these things. I'm always up against the wall with my time. So walk me through that.
First, we have to go back. What is your goal?
To not be in a hurry and to arrive on time and to get out the door without thinking, did I do this? Did I do that? Because I'm so hurried.
Okay. So the behavior that you have is you want to be able to be on time everywhere and not be rushed.
Right.
But your behavior is what?
Oh, spend, you know, laying in the bed a little too long, spending a little bit too much time at the gym, you know, looking at my clock. Oh, I can do one or two more things within that next 10 minutes. Just procrastinating. I love that one.
Okay. Procrastinating is a big word I like. Okay. Let's just pick, I stayed too long at the gym.
Okay.
What would happen if you didn't do that?
Then I would be on time.
How would you feel if you didn't stay longer at the gym?
Probably a little bit more relaxed. Yeah.
Would you feel like you would not be in shape? Would you feel that you were letting yourself down at some other area? I mean, you need to think about what's the feeling.
Okay. Of what? Of why?
When you're at the gym mm-hmm. and you're deciding to stay for another few minutes, even though the conscious part of you knows that it's going to put you back into your old turmoil.
Right.
If you didn't do that, what is the feeling that's making you stay?
I see. Okay.
There's some belief that you have that if you stayed, you would be healthier. You would have a great figure if you stayed two more minutes. There's some belief you have, whether it's health or how you look or a belief about just people in general that work out. There's,
right.
there's some belief you have there
uh-huh.
that's overriding your goal of wanting to give yourself time to be on time and not rushed and crazy.
Yeah. And I usually do get places on time, but the process of like really staying on top of myself to get there, I feel like I put extra stress on my unnecessary stress to go, okay, I've got to go. This has got to happen now. Yada blah.
And so I wanted to say, look at how do you put that unnecessary stress? And one example you gave was, I'll stay at the gym too long.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some belief that you have that staying at the gym a few minutes longer is serving.
Yeah. But I also, in the morning when it's time to get up, you know, I get out of bed, but I would like to spend a few more minutes in there. So what's my belief about being in bed?
But you, yes.
You see what my question?
Your goal is to be on time places.
Right.
The staying in bed a little longer. How is that? What if you did not stay in bed? How would you feel? Turn it around.
Right. Okay.
What if you did not stay in bed?
Okay. Okay. What would that be like for me?
Yeah. Can you think of it? It takes some thought.
Sure. Yeah.
And I don't want to put you on the spot.
But you are. That's okay. I hope to be an example for all the listeners out there. I'm sweating bullets right now. Okay. So I did want to give that example because there's so many different ways you can look at this, and there's so many. If I were listening to this program, I would say, okay, but my thing is this. It's not a kitchen. It's not, you know, I think procrastination is a big one. I think there's all these different habits that we have, and I just want to be able to kind of turn the table a little bit to give people a wider view of what could be blocking us and what types of things that we get into that stop us.
So I'd like to talk for just a brief moment about the immunity to change is not my invention.
Yes.
Two professors, Kagan and Leahy, came up with this after years of studying psychologists, people, and how they change, how human beings develop. And they've put together a four-step process. And the first step is, what is your goal and why is it important to you? And the next step is, if you were going to do four columns, the next column would be, what are my behaviors now, not thoughts. What are my behaviors that do not support this goal?
Mm.
What am I doing or not doing that don't support this goal? And it's behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes you a while to think of this or to observe yourself. And then on the third column, you look at, if I didn't do that behavior, so for you, if I didn't stay in bed, what do I think would happen?
Mm-hmm.
How would I feel? A lot of times if you put it in a if-then sentence, so if I talked to my mother-in-law, then my whole life would fall apart in the house.
Yeah.
So is the goal you have, that's your foot that's on the gas. And column number three that we just talked about is when your foot is on the brake. So if you've ever tried to do a new, that push-pull, that tension between your foot's on the gas and the foot's on the brake.
Okay. You know what? I really want to get this next caller in. Emily, welcome to Bread and Roses.
Hi.
Hi.
I have undergone a lot of personal change in the last 4 months. And I was a vegetarian for about 2 years in high school. But then I got kind of suckered into, like, Wendy's bacon cheeseburgers at 99 cents, you know? And so for 20 years, I was really, like, very green, you know, I wanted to do everything as green as I could and understand it all. But I went vegetarian for a few years in high school, but then I just kind of, I kind of thought to myself, like, I just don't want to leave the team, you know, I don't want to leave, like, the meat eating team, and I love variety. So I was like, I can't do that. But, like the past 4 months, you know, I realized that my belief about it was, and so, like, I had my mind shifted dramatically at that point, and everything sort of changed. So, but that's just one aspect of change. But my question more was, like addictions. Like, how do you see this happening in the context of addictions, just generally?
Thank you for that question. And, you know, Emily, I just want to say it takes a lot of courage to call in and share yourself this way, and we appreciate it. And so I'll turn this over to Joanne.
Well, I would have to be honest and say I don't really have an answer for your question. If someone is in the middle of an addiction, that's a different category than just looking at how human beings develop. People that have an addiction are also humans and they're also developing, but I don't believe this particular process lends itself to helping with addictions. Does that make sense? Does that help you at all?
Well, we may have lost Emily. And so moving on, going back to what you were saying, around your foot on the gas and on the brake, New Year's resolutions.
Right.
We're running out of time, and I really want to get that in.
So I just want to reiterate that when you look at your goal, that's your foot on the gas. This is the change I want to make in my life. And when you look at column three that says, oh, this is my belief about the world if I actually did it, Remember when I had you consider putting your behaviors that didn't support the goal in the middle? All of a sudden, those behaviors are not your enemy anymore. You can see how brilliant you are at putting together a system to protect you from making your life unstable, insecure, fearful. So these behaviors are supporting this hidden commitment that you have. And I say hidden because it's usually kind of an unconscious reason for these behaviors. And those behaviors all of a sudden make plenty of sense. Instead of just looking at your goal and the behaviors that you're doing that are not supporting it and beating yourself up, these behaviors are supporting your immune system. They're brilliant. Your body, your mind, your psychology has put together these to protect you.
So instead of, go back to what you're saying about instead of beating yourself up, that is so key.
Oh, yeah.
Go to that.
These behaviors don't mean you're a failure. They don't mean you're lazy. These behaviors are the evidence that you have an immune system at work, a very healthy immune system. And so what you need to do is to get to an understanding in column 3 of what do you really believe would happen to you if you didn't do those behaviors? And there's the tension between column 1 and column 3 in this immunity to change is how you want to change and the behaviors that keep you safe.
I read an article, the Huffington Post article by Todd Van Luling, and it was published on January 23rd in the Healthy Living section. And I just want to, there's plenty of points here, but there's just a couple I want to point out. And it says, don't quit on quitting. Understand that a habit isn't simply who you are. Write your problems down and clear your mind and take things slower. And this is one I really love. It says, remind yourself of the resolution and why you want to change. What do you say to that, Joanne?
Well, I think the key is the remind yourself why you want to change. That goal has got to be something that's really important to you. Mm-hmm. And then it's important when you notice you have behaviors that aren't supporting it to understand why they're there. Mm-hmm. And then it's your choice to say, okay, I'm willing to change my worldview and take some tiny steps at experiments to see if that is truly how the world works now that I'm an adult, now that I'm in a different world than I was in when those beliefs and that immune system got put in place.
Oh, and you know, here we are almost at the end of the hour. We barely scratched the surface. What a topic. What a topic. Thank you for being here. And I want to give you a minute. Tell our listening audience what it is you really want them to walk away with from this interview. And will you please share your website with us?
Oh, yes. What I'd like you to walk away with is just a sense of wonder whenever you find yourself putting your foot on the brake, a sense of wonder at how brilliant you are at protecting yourself and not use it to beat yourself up. And go back to beginner's mind and go, oh, I get to learn now about why I have these behaviors and what beliefs I have that are kind of lingering under the surface that I get to learn about and decide whether it's time to change.
That is really great. And for me, this whole topic, and I want to share again, I've been through this process with you and I'm still learning. And I think that's great, but it's also not so great that we need to wrap up right now.
Oh, yes.
So I thank you for being on the show. What is your website, Joanne?
My website is my last name, CB, that's spelled S as in Sam, IE.com.
It's easy. And they can also, if you go to kboo.fm and look up the show, your website is there. So we can always find you. And I absolutely have to welcome you to come back because this is obviously a topic that people want to know more about.
Thank you. And I want to thank everyone that called in.
Yeah,
that was
for sure.
Those are vulnerable times.
For sure. Well, it's time. Our collective brings you this show every Friday night at 6 p.m. and women have had this forum on KBOO for 35 years. This airspace is here to be shared. This collective, Bread and Roses, I encourage you absolutely to reach out to KBOO's volunteer coordinator, Ani Haynes. You can also find us on KBOO's website at kboo.fm/breadandroses or on Facebook at KBOO Bread Roses Women's News. I deeply thank our guest this evening, Joanne Seabee, for sharing so much, and our engineer, Brooke, for holding us down and taking such great care of us. And to all the callers, and at the end, our switchboard was lit up, and I apologize for not being able to get to all of you, but I do thank you for making the effort to call into the show. And now, dear listener, please take the very best care of yourself all the time and everywhere you go. No exceptions. Thank you for calling and being here. Have a wonderful evening.
To the end of Bread and Roses and going into the Hard Knock show for the next hour. It is 7:01 and you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
Our hearts are hungry too. Oh, hear
the people singing. Tune in to the Prison Pipeline Monday, January 27th. At 6:30 p.m. as we interview a member of Leonard Peltier Defense Offense Committee to give us updates on Leonard Peltier and the upcoming march and rally in Tacoma, Washington. Prison Pipeline, Monday, January 27th, 6:30 p.m.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the 24th annual Cascades Festival of African Films, which will be held from January 31st through March 1st at the Portland Community College Cascade Campus and the Hollywood Theater. The 24th season will open with Gree Gree, a drama set in Chad, following a young man who, despite suffering from partial paralysis, becomes a renowned dancer with the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard, Portland, Oregon. Over 20 films will be screened in this year's 24th annual Cascade African Film Festival, beginning on January 31st, running through March 1st. For more information, please go to our website at kboo.fm and click on the right-hand side of the page under Community Events.
This is M1 from Dead Prez.
Hey, what's up? This is Boots from the Coup.
Nah, I mean, telling you to stay tuned to Hard Knock Radio.
Keep it locked.
On the move, this is Pam Africa on Hard Knock Radio, the station of resistance. Down with this rotten-ass system.
Yo, check this out. Hard Knock Radio coming at you, bringing the noise. This is Chuck D, Public Enemy number one. News, views, and hip-hop.
Peace and love. This is Azeem. You're listening to Hard Knock Radio, real radio, from the concrete up. All the way to the sun. Keep shining, y'all. One love.
What's up, folks? This is your girl Femi representing the whole Bay Area. I'm here on Hard Knock Radio. News, views, and hip-hop. Stay tuned.
Sitting in front of me here, Hard Knock Radio in Washington, D.C., is no stranger to our airwaves and many of the airwaves around here. His name is Wendell Potter. He's the author and former insurance executive. you were blowing the whistle on what was going on inside the insurance industries for a very long time. But it seems like there's more whistles to be blown.
Yeah.
We're seeing all this resistance, and one would think, like, what is going on here, you know? So maybe you can kind of lay it out for us. Why is there still so much resistance when they're getting anywhere from 40 to 50 million new customers?